And I think when you have a partner who is going to validate what you want in any situation, you're going to feel a lot more comfortable to go, hey, this actually kind of hurts a little bit. Can we just add in that extra piece, that extra lube, or that different position, or even just take a little break, whatever it is. You feel the space to do that. And I think that's really important.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Asking for Myself, the podcast where I ask all the questions you're too afraid to. I'm your host, Mia, and today we're diving into painful sex. Gently, of course. Many people don't know that I actually started Taboo in large part due to my own experience with painful sex. Up until last year, I had never been able to use a tampon without extreme pain, and after an experience with sexual trauma, penetration became pretty much impossible for me for years. Experiencing that pain and perceived failure kickstarted a cycle of not even wanting to have sex or feeling the need to drink in order to loosen up or somehow forget my pain, which, by the way, I absolutely 100% do not recommend. Painful sex to me was about much more than the physical. It was so much about the mental and emotional toll it took and how it impacted my relationships, including my relationship with myself and my body. While I fortunately have not experienced painful sex in quite some time, at least not on a consistent or as extreme basis, it is a topic I remain extremely passionate about. I should mention that this conversation heavily skews toward penis-vagina penetrative sex. If you want to or have tried exploring dildos or penetrative sex toys and experienced pain with that, this may be relevant to you as well. If you're listening to this episode and you relate, perhaps you may even find some of the conversation triggering. Please know that you are not alone and there are so many options out there that can help. Speaking of help, today I am joined by Dr. Sabrina Baxter, pelvic floor physical therapist and host of the podcast No Such Thing as TMI, and Alyssa Harper, women's health and sexuality advocate and host of the podcast She Said What. We've got a lot of podcasters on today's episode, and trust me, it's such a good one. Can't wait for you to listen and see what you think. Without further ado, let's talk taboo. I totally forgot the intro there, but brought it right back. Enjoy. Okay, hello and welcome back to another episode of Asking for Myself. I'm really, really excited about this episode because painful sex is a very personal topic for me. It's something that I have a lot of experience with, unfortunately, and I know so many people do. And I wanted to bring in, you know, someone, actually both of you, I think, who have experienced painful sex and then also learn more about, you know, what you can actually do to reduce, you know, the chances of you experiencing painful sex or how to address it if that's something that's ongoing for you. So just to kick things off, would you each mind introducing yourselves and sharing a bit about your background?
Sure, I can go first. So my name is Alyssa Harper. I am a wellness influencer and I focus specifically on sexual wellness, especially through my TikTok. Talk a lot about LGBTQ plus rights, things to do with sex and relationships. And on top of that, I'm actually a Pilates instructor as well. So I kind of have two ways that I'm kind of coming at this conversation. And yeah, I'm Canadian. I'm based in Sydney, Australia. And that's me.
So cool. I'm Sabrina. I am Dr. Sabrina Baxter. I am a doctor of physical therapy that specializes in pelvic floor health, anything bladder, bowel, sexual dysfunction. I'm your girl. I work at a hospital in an outpatient clinic, and then I also have my own business where I do work with people online, and I do private going to people's houses, like a concierge kind of practice. But yeah, I love talking about this. I have also experienced painful sex, so it holds near and dear to my heart. And I actually just put all my resources towards creating like an online course about how to DIY pain-free sex, which is like so exciting for me because I just from having this platform for like a year, it's crazy how many of us go through this and don't have the resources on how to overcome it. And on top of that, pelvic floor therapy is just so inaccessible to so many. So really excited about that.
Yeah, that's amazing. I remember when I first discovered pelvic floor physical therapy and learned, like, I remember originally I learned the term vaginismus after like doing so much research, trying to understand what was going on for me. And then I, you know, found pelvic floor physical therapy. And then I was like, oh my gosh, this is so expensive. And it's not covered by insurance. And I was like, and honestly, it sounded a little bit intimidating at the time. So I was like, I don't know if that's what I, you know, I kind of wish I had done it at that time, but it was very like inaccessible for where I was in life. And so, so I love that you're doing that because I do think it can be really difficult for people to actually access that. Not that they shouldn't pursue it if they can, but definitely having something that's more of an accessible resource is amazing. When is that coming out?
October 3rd.
Oh, awesome. Okay, cool. I think that's the week this episode will air. So that would be perfect. Go check it out. Anyone who's listening.
Lol. So jokes on jokes on jokes, because this episode is actually airing in April. I have not been on top of things. It has been a really hard few months. I don't know. Time is flying. And anyway, the course is out. It is the Do-It-Yourself Guide to Pain-Free Penetration, and I will link to it. I'm super excited about that resource for all of you listening, and share it with people who you may know who are going through any type of painful penetration. Anyway, just needed to chime in because obviously the episode did not get out months ago, and I really appreciate my former self who really believed in herself like that. And alas, I am believing in myself now because we finally got this out. So anyway, thank you for your patience and back to the show.
So, okay, Alyssa, since you started us off with your intro, can you share a little bit about your experience with painful sex? I know I listened to an episode of your podcast where you talked about it, and I would love for you to share with our audience, you know, what your experience was, how you realized that it wasn't normal, and then, you know, your journey of deciding to seek help.
Yeah, I think for me, from the time I was sexually active, like when I was younger, kind of dating, I always had it, but I didn't realize that that wasn't normal because people don't talk about it. And so I dated somebody for a solid 3 years, and most of our sex for me was at least mildly painful, and I never even questioned it. And so once I kind of got into the relationship that I am now, I'm actually married, I over time was like, I kind of feel like there are things that I now know that I can do to make it less painful. Like, obviously I know we're going to get way super into this, but like things like lube and not going like straight for penetration and things like that. But I only learned that through like my experience. And one day I was like, I think I want to kind of do some research, see if anybody's talking about this. And then, yeah, I started learning words like vaginismus and learning about all these different things. And I wasn't thinking that, oh, I have that thing, but I do now realize that painful sex isn't like the standard. This isn't what we want. I think just with my kind of where I learned about sex, that being like just through conversations with friends, obviously like porn, things like that. You don't see those conversations happening in porn, like, oh, let's stop, take a second. This is hurting. I think I need some lube. Like, we don't see that. And so I never got that kind of like, I wasn't able to reflect on it. So yeah, with time, I started to realize that it was definitely a problem, something I wanted to fix if I could. And once I kind of learned that I could fix it, and I saw a sexologist, and I actually went and got help with it and learned all of the little tips and tricks that she gave me, I was like, I need to start sharing about this, and we need to start talking about this, because everyone just thinks it's normal, but it doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah, that's very relatable. And I think also just the way that we're socialized is that if you're having, you know, penis and vagina sex, that the person with vagina is going to experience pain. Like, I think everyone just thinks your first time is going to be painful, or, oh, pain is just a normal part of sex, of penetrative sex. And so, of course, it makes sense that you wouldn't think, oh, this, you know, this is even a little uncomfortable, or to a point where I'd want to address it, because that's just what seems like it's normal. And that's what so many people experience, that it's like, oh, yeah, like, yeah, that's what sex is. So Sabrina, same question for you. Like, what was your experience with painful sex and kind of recognizing that that wasn't normal, or you didn't want it to be your normal?
So I actually, when I first started having sex, I didn't have painful sex. So I had my experience is more of a situational pain with sex, which is super interesting and something that I started uncovering as I was like introduced to the pelvic health world. So I never had pain with sex for like not until like end of college. And then I just kind of like dismissed it. I was like, oh, maybe it's because like I'm near my period, or maybe it's because like whatever. I just was like, it is what it is. Kind of similar to you, Alyssa. I was just like, minimal discomfort, but like this is expected. Like maybe I'm just not in the mood enough. Maybe, you know, I just have to suck it up. Like that was literally my motto, was just, it's fine. Just suck it up. It's going to be over soon, literally. So when I was in PT school, and then I like learned about pelvic health through pregnancy postpartum. So it wasn't even about like people in their 20s and their teens. It was like strictly education about pregnancy postpartum. I was like, oh, I like this. You know, I would request a clinical rotation in it. And I went on my rotation, and that's when I started working with patients that had vaginismus, vulvodynia, vestibulodynia, you know, all these different diagnoses associated with painful sex. And then I started working with people that just had simply overactive pelvic floor muscles, because you don't always need a diagnosis of painful sex. The medical term for painful sex is dyspareunia. And it doesn't necessarily mean there has to be like a, oh, you have vulvar pain, you have vestibule pain, you have, which is super interesting. So there's so many different kinds of painful sex. And I worked with people that had simply overactive pelvic floor muscles. And they were like, yeah, like I will experience a lot of pain, and then like I'll go through phases where I don't. And I was like, that's me too. And there's actually a term called situational vaginismus, which I don't think that I had. I just think I had overactive pelvic floors. And did I have that because I had chronic yeast infections, or because I was chronically stressed? You know, I had chronic fatigue, I had metabolic dysfunction, who knows? But I do know that I had periods of time where I had pain with sex and didn't enjoy sex. And then I had periods of time that I did. And I was like, this is just too weird. But to your point, like, why is no one talking about it, you know?
And just for anyone who is listening, who I know that a lot of us don't, like, we kind of interchange vulva. Well, actually, no one really says vulva, but I think that, unless you're probably like in this space, but I think that, you know, everyone like probably refers to it as a vagina. And so can you provide a distinction between like vulvar pain and vaginal pain?
Yeah. So just like quickly anatomically, your vulva is what you see externally. So like that's your labia majora, your outer lips, your inner lips, which by the way, one can be hairy, one can be not, one can be longer, one can be not. Every vulva is unique. It's not gonna, like, your vulva should not look like your friend's vulva. Okay. So I'll just say that, because I'm hearing too many cases of people getting labioplasties and all these things. And there's just, no, your vulva is unique and it's beautiful the way it is, and the right person is going to love it. So I'm just going to say that. But so your vulva is everything you see externally, including their urethral opening, the clitoris, the vaginal opening, even your perineum, which is that area of skin between vaginal opening and anus. So that's your vulva. And then your vestibule is the opening to your vagina. So like when you look at you have three holes, your urethral opening where you pee out of, your vaginal opening, and then your anal opening. Your vaginal opening, that first little layer, like right around the opening, that's called your vestibule. And that's the entryway to the vaginal canal, which connects from vulva to your cervix or uterus.
Awesome. So if you're experiencing more like, I guess, if someone's experiencing pain during sex, is that typically, what are the different ways that you can experience pain during sex?
So people can have pain with initial penetration. And, you know, it could be maybe they feel a stretching sensation. Maybe they feel some kind of tearing sensation. Maybe it's friction from like the insertion. Maybe they have pain. And when I say tearing, usually people report some kind of tearing like down by the perineum, which is, like I said, that area of skin between vaginal opening and anus. You can have deeper pain with penetration. You could have, you know, sometimes like the in and out or the thrusting motions, like that friction pain. And maybe that's because you're not lubricated enough. Like, you know, like Alyssa said, her first thing was like, well, let me think about lube. Cause when we're 16, when we're 17, 18, no one's like, make sure you have lube on hand. You know what I mean? It's just like raw dog it. So there's so many different types of pain. And I think that's important to kind of address too, because your pain may not be the same as someone else's pain, and that goes for anything, right? So there's so many different kinds. I hope that kind of differentiates it a little bit.
Yeah, no, I think that's super helpful. And I think just to like give a little bit of a deep dive before we go into some of the, I think, mental aspects of painful sex, because we've already touched on it, what is pelvic floor physical therapy or pelvic floor PT?
So pelvic floor PT addresses those pelvic floor muscles that sit at the bottom of your pelvis. So your pelvic floor muscles attach to your pubic symphysis, which is like that bony area in the front. And then they go all the way to your tailbone or your coccyx, which is that, you know, your tailbone in the back. And they have five major functions. The first one is to support your internal organs. It's going to hold on to the uterus, bladder, rectum, and people that identify as a woman. And it's going to hold on to prostate, bladder, rectum, and people that identify as a man. And so that's its first function, is to just support those organs. And then the second function is to open and close those sphincters when you're ready to pee, when you're ready to poop, and hold it all in when you're not. And then also stabilization, it helps stabilize those muscles. So your pelvic bone muscles, your low back, your even your legs. And then it acts as a sump pump. So it helps with lymph drainage, lymph circulation, blood circulation. And the last one, I have these on lock, but oh, sexual function. So they relax for penetration and then they contract with orgasm. So when you're aroused, they're contracting. So some people even have actually pain with like arousal and orgasm. And that can be when they have overactive pelvic floors, those muscles will not let up. They're like clenching, 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 and they won't let go. And then you have this like surge of pain.
Got it. Okay. And so for anyone who either has like the situational pain or the chronic pain, they can go to like a pelvic floor physical therapist in order to address either of those issues?
Yeah, usually people will go to their OBGYN and they'll say like, I have pain, or they'll start noticing it with like tampons first. Not everyone, because some people can tolerate tampons and pelvic exams fine, then they can't tolerate intercourse. But they'll usually start noticing that like they are tight in some kind of way, or things don't just, they're like, this feels a little off. But so usually they'll go to their OBGYN. And then that's where things are a little not what they should be. I don't think enough OBGYNs recognize the pelvic floor therapy profession or even like refer out enough. I think most of the times it is just the suggestions of more lube, more foreplay, more wine, which I think is appropriate, the lube and the foreplay one, because that's definitely where, you know, we're not really taught that at all when we're young. The wine one, I don't think is appropriate at all, because so many people are sober and have no desire to drink. So I actually hate that advice. But so if you start there and you're like, none of this is helping me, then that's when the OBGYN needs to be like, okay, you should be referred to pelvic floor therapy. But honestly, most people find me through their own research, which is crazy. And it's like so sad, but because I know that that wasn't their first person to go to, you know? So that's why I think it's great why so many like sexual health advocates on the internet are like, pelvic floor therapy, like don't knock pelvic floor therapy, you know?
Yeah, I definitely know. I think that unfortunately, I do feel like the first line of defense is going to maybe talking to a friend, but then it's going to your gynecologist. And I think there's too many that don't have really affirming responses. And also, interestingly, I think even with alcohol, like, can't that also cause vaginal dryness anyway?
It could. I mean, I don't know. Yes and no, because like when you do drink alcohol, like if you respond well to alcohol, like me, I'll use myself as an example. Like, I get frisky, so like
yeah, I'm not sure that
vaginal lubrication. So who knows? But I do want to say, like, the OBGYN as a first line defense is important. Like, I do want people to go to their OBGYN because, you know, worst case scenario, there is an infection, or you know, you need to get the right medication, or you know, you have abnormal Pap smears. Like, you do need to see the OBGYN to rule out important stuff, and then you should be referred to pelvic floor therapy if all that stuff comes back negative.
Yeah, 100%. And I think also if you have the resources, it's really about finding a doctor that is sort of like in partnership with you and that you feel like they're not giving, like dismissing your pain, or they're actually taking it seriously and can, you know, point you in the right direction. And then, of course, like figure out what's going on. So, Alyssa, in your experience, like, I guess at what point did you realize that what you were experiencing was like not normal or not okay? And was that in the relationship that you're in now, or was that before you were with your partner?
I think it's actually funny, pretty similar to Sabrina. I would have situations where it wasn't super painful. So then when it was painful, I was like, oh no, this thing is happening again. I thought I was good now, you know, and I've definitely learned that in different periods of my cycle. Obviously now kind of years later, after looking at this for a long time, different parts of my menstrual cycle, I'm more dry in certain phases, especially for me getting close towards my period. In that kind of like luteal phase, I tend to get, you know, more dry. And now when I know that I'm in that phase, if I am going to go have sex with my husband, I will tell him like, okay, like lube, get this, get that. Like, I'm like, we're getting ready. And now I have the confidence to do that. I think at the time, like way back when we first got together and we're dating and just kind of having sex and like, you know, it's just, you aren't as honest in certain situations because you're like really trying to, I guess, show that person that, you know, you're cool. Everything's all good. Everything's all fun. I'm super sexy. Everything's chill. I wouldn't say anything. And then over time I was like, okay, sometimes it hurts. Sometimes it doesn't. I want it to hurt. Never. And I need to figure out how I'm going to get myself to that place. And so, yeah, I think that comparison, I was like, okay, non-painful sex is possible. I just want that to be the norm for me.
Yeah, totally. I feel like my initial experience, my original experience with a tampon was like nearly impossible. But then my actual like first sexual experiences were actually totally fine. And then I think that an experience for me, at least with trauma, kind of triggered that probably like vaginismus that then became like very chronic and more of like an ongoing thing. And so I think that, yeah, I've definitely learned that. I mean, over time, I've learned so much, but I think that it can be the case that, you know, and that's, I think, what can be confusing for people where they're like, oh, you know, sometimes this is really painful. Sometimes it's not. Is it me? Is it like the situation? Is it, you know, maybe your partner? Like, and all those things can be a contributing factor, of course, I imagine, like, you know, and I think even like position or size, like those things can make a difference. But I think that recognizing, you know, that you can speak up and also that there are things that you can do is really important. So one thing I want to talk about is, I'm curious if either of you have this. And so it's just kind of a theory that I'm curious about, which is being a perfectionist and just the concept of like not being able to really relinquish control. So being very much, you know, wanting to have control over things, and maybe that extends into the bedroom. So do you see any validity in that, that maybe there's a connection between being, or maybe, I don't even know also if either of you are perfectionists, or if like for you, Sabrina, if you've seen this with different clients, but do you think there's any connection between that and, you know, experiencing pain or tension?
That's a good question. I have seen like clients that I work with that need control in their lives that experience like pelvic pain because they can't, you know, they're just so high strung, high anxiety, like everything gets to them. And that's when I'm like, you need to set boundaries. Like, you really need to be like, I literally will have 1 hour long sessions where the whole session, we're just practicing breathing, stretching, and we're meditating. And my coworkers that don't practice pelvic floor therapy, they're like, literally, what are you doing in that room? like, why do you have like meditation music? Like, what are you doing in that room? Because I have a private room, obviously, and all the other therapists are like, in the gym. And they're like, what are you doing? And I'm like, no, you don't understand. Like, my patient needs to chill the fuck out. That's what we're doing. So, I mean, I've never like asked any of my clients if like they were someone that like is more like alpha or submissive type in the bedroom. Like, we've like talked about it, like, you know, passing, but never have I correlated someone being one or the other with pelvic pain. But I have correlated people that are more like need to be in control of their lives in general, or they're, you know, they're not necessarily go with the flow. They're more like that type A personality, or they just really let things get to them. That's what I've correlated more with like higher levels of pelvic pain in general.
In my like experience, I feel like I wanted not necessarily perfectionism, but I wanted to like just be sexy to my partner. Like, to me, it wasn't about perfectionism within myself. It was more to do with like body image. Like, I wanted my partner to look at me and be like, you know, oh, she's sexy and she's fun and like we're having a good time. And I never wanted to like kill the mood. And this is something that I've noticed a lot with myself. And I've seen with a lot of other people as well, a lot of conversations about this where people don't want to, you know, ask the person to put on a condom because they don't want to kill the mood. People don't want to ask, get out of his favorite position because they don't want to kill the mood. And you end up being quite kind of like submissive, but not in like a fun way, more in like, hey, you are just doing what they want because you want to make sure that they are satisfied, which we could obviously get into as like a very patriarchal way of thinking and like dates back and definitely isn't necessarily an us problem. It does have to do a lot with like our general conditioning when it comes to how we feel about men. And of course, this is only talking about penetration specifically with men, female, male, you know, genitalia. But yeah, so for me, it was more just this, like, I don't want to kill the vibe.
Yeah, more of like, yeah, I think what you're touching on is somewhat one of like people pleasing or like wanting to be that sort of, yeah, and be desirable, not wanting to be the person who's like, no, I don't want, you know, this, it doesn't feel good, or kill the mood, definitely. And I don't know why it's like, sometimes also I feel like there's that internal question. I don't know if either of you have experienced this. I imagine it's pretty common where you debate, like, is it even worth, like you were kind of saying, I think Sabrina, you did say this earlier of like, it'll be over soon enough. So like, what has been your experience with kind of being in it and you're like, this is a little uncomfortable, but I feel like it's either like almost over or we're going to like switch positions soon. And how long do you let that go? Like, what would you recommend also to people? Like, how long do you let that go on? Would you say don't at all? Or would you say like, you know, I don't know, sometimes you can just be like, okay, it's only going to last a little bit longer.
Yeah. It's really hard when you're working with someone that's like in a hookup phase of their life, because that's, I will say, that's super hard to navigate, because like, you know, Alyssa was saying, you're in the mindset where you want to be sexy to your partner. You don't want to kill the vibe. Like, I have actually always been in long-term relationships. So I've always been the kind of girl that's like, if it's not working, we're stopping. Except with my ex. Like, with my ex, I do think that I kind of had that general conditioning that Alyssa was talking about, where I know that he likes his position and I know whatever, I'm just going to keep sucking it up. And if it really would bother me, I'd be like, listen, hurry up. And now what I do with my boyfriend, which like, I will say too, like having the right partner just makes the biggest difference. Like, your communication's on point. Like, there are times, literally last night, where we had sex and I was like, you need to go so fucking slow because I'm so tired right now. So it's like, that's just like having that open communication. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, the right person is, they like that you're being open with them. Like, you're, the right person doesn't want to just jam them inside you and like you be like in excruciating pain. That's not hot. That's not sexy. Like, the two of you want to be having a good time. And once he went slow, I was like, all right, you know, we're good. Like, this feels good. And then you get to have good sex. Like, that's really what good sex is when you two are on the same page. Like, you respect each other's boundaries. And then you just like communicate how you're feeling. And like you said, if I felt like I was like drying up, or if I just felt like I wasn't in the mood anymore, it was starting to bother me, I'd be like, you literally need to be done in 2 seconds. So hurry up. Like, I'm like, this went from being like a nice, intimate, long something to like a quickie, so wrap it up.
Yeah, I totally agree. It has to do with your partner as well. I actually, kind of similar, I have an ex that I, like I said, I was with for a long time, and he wasn't really the person to like validate my emotions. And like, not even just within sex, I think within our relationship in general. And I think that speaks a lot to how you are going to interact in the bedroom. Like, if you are going for a drive and you're like, oh shoot, I forgot this, can we turn around and go home and go get this? And they're like, no, we're going to be late, I already told you, you know, you always forget things. If you feel that hesitancy to ask for things, to ask to change the plan, to be validated, and they don't give you that on a regular basis, you're so much less likely to ask for those things in the bedroom. And I think now that I'm with a partner that I know is going to validate my emotions, whatever it is, if I need to say, hey, I know we said we're going to watch this movie tonight, we're halfway through it, but I'm falling asleep, like I really want to go to sleep, I know that he is going to put me and my needs above being able to watch a movie. And you know what I mean? So it's like these little connections between your everyday life and your sex life absolutely do like interact. And I think when you have a partner who is going to validate what you want in any situation, you're going to feel a lot more comfortable to go, hey, this actually kind of hurts a little bit. Can we just add in that extra piece, that extra lube, or that different position, or even just take a little break, whatever it is. You feel the space to do that. And I think that's really important.
Yeah. I think what you both said made me think of two things. One, just this idea of like killing the mood or disappointing your partner, which is that honestly, if you're not speaking up, that is more likely to end sex than speaking up, because just because you're experiencing some discomfort doesn't mean sex has to end. It can, like you just said, Alyssa, like mean that you pause or you try a different position or you just try something new instead of continuing to do what's not feeling good. So I think when you speak up, it actually presents the opportunity to do something that feels better for both of you. And then two, I know that I am going to forget it. So what was two? I cannot keep a thought. That is something I should have known. But I forget what number two was, but oh, I think it was about, oh yeah, the right partner. And at least for me, I think that ultimately I get it. I totally get like wanting to please your partner. I totally get, you know, kind of suffering through something uncomfortable, but I can say it isn't worth it. So if there is a partner who isn't responding when you bring that up or when you say, hey, this is a little uncomfortable or you feel nervous to say it, like that's probably just not sex that you want to be having or with the person that you want to be having with it. I know it's not as easy as that and simple as that, but I think in the end, it can just make things a lot worse, especially if you're continuing to subject yourself to something that's really painful or uncomfortable for you psychologically and physically as well.
Yeah. Honestly, even if you're not with like one partner and you're in that, like that hookup era or whatever, cause like I've been there, done that, like you still want to make sure that you feel respected and like you feel appreciated. And like, you're like, the whole point of sex is to have fun. So if you're like having sex with someone and you're like, oh my God, like, is he done yet? Like, oh my God, is this, you know, this isn't even comfortable. Like, I'm not even having fun. If you're not having fun with sex, then don't go back. Like, don't do that anymore. It's not worth it. It's literally, you're going to look back in 5 years and be like, why did I do that?
Yes, 100%. And it doesn't have to be like that. Like, it doesn't have to. That's not, I mean, it's normal in the sense that it's common, but it doesn't have to be like your normal. So I think that's really important.
Yeah. My favorite phrase is common does not mean normal.
Yes. I love that.
One thing that does need to be normalized when it comes to having sex is lube. And we simply cannot have an episode about painful sex without discussing lube. While it's certainly not the only thing that can help, lube can really become one of your most trusted best friends in the bedroom, if it hasn't already. And like a good friend, State Farm is there. No, like a good friend, lube is here to help you feel better and make life more fun. We already know one of my favorites, and that's UberLube. UberLube is a silicone-based lubricant that lasts. Added vitamin E provides a silky soft feel to this unscented moisturizing formula. You've heard me say it before, and I'll say it again. Trust me, you'll never go back to the sticky stuff you were using before. I've also recently been using UberLube to just like tame my hair sometimes. It prevents chafing. It's honestly like I love an all-in-one, and it's a fabulous product. Whether you're having fun with a partner or getting busy with some self-exploration, UberLube is one you're gonna wanna keep right on your nightstand for easy access. And it doesn't hurt that the glass bottle it comes in is absolutely gorgeous. Mine is on my nightstand at all times. Get yourself a bottle of UberLube or several at uberlube.com. And use code TABU, that's capital T-A-B-U, for 10% off. I'm already excited for your future sexual endeavors. I know that we kind of already touched on this a little bit as far as like what you were saying, Sabrina, with like having sessions where you're actually unpacking or like getting your patients or clients to, you know, kind of release some anxiety and tension, mindfulness. So, and I know that, you know, a lot of painful sex really is like the emotional and mental aspect of it, along with the physical and feeling like, you know, something's wrong with me, or feeling just honestly betrayed by your body in some cases, or confused, or again, like you're disappointing your partner if maybe you can't have sex, and all of these other things that are coming up. So Alyssa, I know that you touched on like working with a sexologist and sort of like being able to start addressing those things that were going on. So can you touch on that a little bit? Like, what was that experience like, and how did you navigate feelings of, you know, just like negative self-worth or feeling like, what's going on with me and why is this happening to me?
Yeah, of course. I think I went to a sexologist because I was like, I have pain during sex. They deal with sex. They can tell me all the practical things to do, and then I'm going to go home and do it in one session. I'm going to be fixed. And I realized that a lot of it didn't just have to do, obviously, with my body. A lot of it had to do with what my brain was doing at the time, my past sexual experiences and how those kind of bled into my current sexual experiences. And it became a whole unraveling. I did get very specific things from the sexologist, which was amazing. And it was just obviously tips like we talked about, lube, certain things like touching around the whole vulva before even coming near the opening of the vagina, and like having that extra kind of stimulation and kind of making your body aware that something is coming around that area, and literally like warming up that area. Very practical things like that, talking about positions and just figuring out what was actually going to practically fix the issue. But a big part for me was just my anxiety. I had struggled with anxiety for a long time, and I had just never connected the two. I never really thought it was, you know, possibly interacting, because I'm like, sex is fun. Why would I be anxious? You know, but obviously I was. And really, really interesting. She was giving me a practice to actually insert my own finger into my vagina and then to feel the tightness and to feel how it reacts and to get used to doing that on my own. Because I'd used tampons, but for some reason, I think because I was comfortable around tampons, I was like, oh, this isn't like a new experience. This isn't going to bother me. You know, I don't have any fear because I'm alone. And so I started doing that, and it was really, really cool. She actually encouraged me to now go and educate my partner on the issue. And now, even now, when we have sex, before any kind of penetration, we always, there's at least a toy or a finger or something that is inserted. And it is like, okay, this is definitely now comfortable enough to then go into penetration. So I just got a lot of really great tips going to go see a sexologist, and I was able to work through a lot of the emotional things that were going on for me to unlearn the habits that I got into with not wanting to communicate when I felt certain ways, and to the point that I was able to educate my partner to the point that he literally, to this, like, he will finger me now, and he will say, babe, I can feel that you're tense. You need to take a deep breath. And I'm like, okay, guru, like, okay. Like, it's so funny.
That's so funny. That's what you're like, wipe me up.
That's it.
That's amazing. Actually, in terms of like navigating that, I'm curious. And of course, you were with a long-term partner, it sounds like, obviously. So I know that I had the experience, even with a long-term partner, where this was years ago, but I did talk about that, you know, I was in pain, or like that I had this experience with pain, or this is uncomfortable for me. And, you know, they were super like respectful of that. And actually to the point of, I think, you know, maybe too, they became, I think, afraid of, you know, doing something that was going to cause me pain. And so obviously, you know, communication, keeping that communication open, but what recommendations would both of you have for how to communicate with your partner, and then how that partner can take it in a way where they're no, where they are being gentle and understanding, but not entirely too timid to even try to, you know, have sex with you, have penetrative sex with you?
Oh, I was going to say, I just feel like, you know, to give men the benefit of the doubt, like they just don't know much about our anatomy. Like, I mean, we don't even know much about our anatomy. Like, we're not really, we don't really learn that in school. So I think what made the biggest difference for me and my relationship was just, I mean, also my boyfriend grew up with two brothers, like didn't have a really a mother figure in his life until like way later. So he never really had like that maternal or like sister feel. So like anything woman was like totally not in his vocabulary. And then we started dating and he was like literally Ariel, Little Mermaid, a whole new world. And I think just like, just me being the freaking nutcase and psychopath that I am, just like constantly oversharing to literally everyone, was awesome for him. Because when I would, I'm also really into cycle syncing. So I love that you brought that up, the whole luteal phase thing. I'm really into that. And he likes to learn about it. And I'm like really into eating for my cycle. So I'll write down like on a refrigerator, like when I'm in like my, right now I'm in my follicular phase, I'll write down what foods are supporting me. And we'll both eat together foods that are supporting my cycle, which is so cool. Cause he's also like, oh, what, like what phase are you in? Or what's like, how are you, you know, I don't know. It's just like cute for him to be like interested. And then I think that translates into the bedroom because, you know, he's interested what positions that, you know, and also you kind of pick up what positions you both like and who likes what and how long you're in the mood to last. So I think just being very open and honest about my body in general, like whether it was discharge, whether it was like infection symptoms, whether it's like whatever, just being open and honest. And then that just kind of translates into the bedroom. And then if I feel a certain way, I vocalize it. And then, or if he like can see my facial expression, he'll ask. So I feel like that's honestly the best way to, is just like that communication with your partner about everything that has to do with vulva vagina, just like openly like surrender your body to your partner and even in communication. And I think that will translate into the bedroom as well.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's so important, like making sure that they're just aware of what's going on with you and having that like open dialogue. I think for me, when I first started to tell him, hey, this is actually a bit painful sometimes, or sorry I didn't tell you this before, but sometimes when we have sex, I'm not enjoying it. You know, like that's a pretty hard thing to say to your partner. They're like, what do you mean? I thought you loved it. You always say you love it so much, you know, and that's a bit of like a hard conversation to have. And you know, it could kind of hurt their ego. And obviously it's not about them, but it could make them feel that, you know, oh my God, I've been doing something wrong feeling. He at first was a bit hesitant. Like after I told him the next time we'd had sex, he was like, is this okay? Like it was a very, you know, pulled back. And I did say to him like, okay, so like you don't need to do that. But he said, okay, like I won't, but you need to tell me if you are in pain. Because my problem at the time was that I was lacking that like confidence to want to say something. And unfortunately, I would get into that headspace like we talked about of, oh, it's going to be over soon. Or, you know, I'm sure it's going to be like a minute. I don't want to like stop and then it's going to take him longer. You know what I mean? I don't want to stop. I want to just like, let's just get there. You know, let's just make it happen. And I think the problem with that was then afterwards, he would be like, so how is that? Because now that I've opened up the conversation, he's going to talk about it. And so he'd be like, so how is that? And I'm like, look, it was a little painful. And he'd be like, babe, you were supposed to tell me. And he would feel so bad that he put me in pain in his mind. And so I definitely had to get better. And I had to choose to be like, okay, I'm going to tell you every time, no matter how annoying I feel, no matter if I have all these fears in the back of my mind, like this is going to ruin our sex life. He's going to not want to be with me anymore because it's too difficult. All of these like negative automatic thoughts that I was having. I was like, okay, these are thoughts that I need to take to the sexologist. I need to understand that that's kind of a me problem because he isn't actually thinking any of those things. He's not doing anything to make me feel that way. And then ultimately, I have to communicate with him and I cannot wait until after we've had sex to say something because then he feels really bad and that's actually unfair to him because I've chosen to open up a conversation with him. And if I'm choosing to open up, I have to choose to also continue to be honest. And if I'm not doing that, then that's unfair to him. So,
yeah, I love that. Oh my gosh. It's so important. So many people feel that way where they're like, I am ruining our sex life. Like my husband's going to, I literally had a patient tell me, she was like, I haven't had sex with my husband in 3 years. He's going to leave me just like my ex-husband did. And I'm like, that is such a weight to carry on you. You know what I'm saying? Like that's such a weight. And like when she told me that, I just felt for her so bad. I was like, your husband's at the appointment right here. Like he's here with you. Like he doesn't feel that way. You know what I'm saying? And that's where, to your point, like that's where those like negative toxic feelings or things that you're thinking, you have to get them out and you have to work through them. Because first of all, it's not fair to you to live like that. And two, it's not fair for you to impose that thought on your partner when they're not even thinking that, you know?
No, and unfortunately, I just feel like other people validate that as well, right? Or maybe even plant that seed in your head where the idea is like, if you're not having sex with your partner, then, you know, they're going to go somewhere else, right? And so that's just what we're told. And so it's like, okay, I guess suffering through this pain is worth it so that I don't lose, you know, my boyfriend, husband, whatever it is.
Yeah, no, it's so true. I had a patient too. I actually asked her, I was like, how often do you have sex? And she's like, oh, you know, wifey duties. I have them every, I do it every day. And I'm like, bitch, no. I just roll over and I'm like, oh my God, this is like a 45-year-old woman. I know she has a good relationship with her husband. So I was like, that's funny to me, honestly. But I'm like, you don't have to do that, you know?
Have you noticed that, like a generational difference in terms of how people, what is it? I mean, I guess it's kind of obvious and it sounds like we're talking about it, but like, what have you seen?
I would say people, I feel like 30s people, 30s like are more like 20s, but 40 plus, they are very much like men are men. This is how they are. High testosterone. They don't care about like your feelings. Like they just want penis and vagina. Like they just want your vagina. So like, that's definitely what I see a lot with the older generation. They're just like, men, they have needs. That's always what I hear. Men, they have needs. Like we have to just satisfy their needs. And then I have like 20-year-olds being like, if he doesn't stay with me, then he can leave. And I'm like, yes.
I know. That's such an annoying phrase to me as well, because it's like women have needs. Everyone has needs. Every person has needs. And why are one set of needs like more valuable than the other? And in many cases, if you are constantly subjecting yourself to something that you don't like, that's only going to probably cause resentment, like other issues in a relationship, just honestly, also just pain in your own body. It's not benefiting anybody in the end. I mean, I guess theoretically it is, but it really, 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 I really don't think it is.
I think it's fair to be like for example, if I was in my relationship and my boyfriend was like, I have needs, like I want to, you know, I want to do more, but like he was like, I want to do more like other stuff. It doesn't have to be something that causes you pain or something like that. I'd be like, okay, he has needs, like I will entertain this, obviously not on his watch, like whenever he wants, but like I'm open, I'm like receptive to his needs. Whereas like when people say, you know, when someone makes you feel bad for not addressing their needs, that's when I'm like, you can't make someone feel bad for the way that they feel. And that's when I think it gets tricky, because so many young women are like, I feel pressure. And like, you shouldn't feel pressure in a relationship. And if you feel that way in a relationship, then that, in my opinion, that's a red flag. Like you should never feel pressure to do something. It's one thing, you know, if you, you know, you get home from work and it's late and your husband or your boyfriend's like, I really want to have sex, like whatever. Okay, whatever. That happens, obviously. Like there's times where I wake my boyfriend up at 3 a.m. because I want an orgasm. Like I've been there. I've done that to him literally before. But if it was like, you know, every day and your significant other's like, give me this, give me this, give me this, I'd be like, listen, that's weird and that's not normal, and you should never feel that kind of pressure in a relationship.
Yeah, it's a super gray area. I feel like there's a, like, people will talk about kind of like coercion, which is obviously a huge issue and something that people do really experience. I especially talk to a lot of young people who find they experience this when they're like dating, and it's more to do with they don't know themselves sexually at all, but they're experiencing it for the first time with a young male who has very potentially watched a lot of porn, and they're like learning from him. It's really hard. It's a really like kind of gray area, because like you said, in a relationship now with my husband, it's like we joke about it. Like if we said, oh, we're going to have sex tonight, you know, if we plan it, we're like, oh, tonight's the night, you know, and then we get there and neither of us want to, we have a thing where like, I'll go up to him and I'll put my hand out like this and he'll just shake it and no words are said. No words. It's just like, we have decided it's off of the schedule and that's it. So like we have things like that, or we have things where like we obviously don't plan to whatever, but then it just happens and I'll be like, no, literally no chance. No, you know, or he'll say that. And it's like, we are so much more just like cut and dry and like, we don't care because we have that strong foundation. But when you don't have that strong foundation, that's where things can get a little bit more like gray area, if you will, because it's like, you know, am I saying yes because I feel like I have to, you know?
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. Totally agree. It's so true. Like when like younger, you know, that whole coercion thing, that's definitely a very, very gray area and difficult to navigate, especially at such a young age.
Yeah, it is. And I think it's also hard to like even just reconcile that or like even know if this is something you want or like even what you're doing or what's going on, because especially I think for women, it's like, yeah, I just feel like all things sex related are normalized and like talked about for men. And then for women, even to like have sexual desire to be like a more, you know, sexual person is stigmatized. And so then you're kind of like, yeah, I think you don't even always know if you're making decisions that are decisions that you want to be making or where you have a hard time navigating that. And then if you have a partner that's kind of like driving things, which I think is pretty common, you end up falling into, you know, scenarios that you don't necessarily actually want to be in.
Yeah, I feel like the best advice I would be like is from a young age, like I look back and I'm like, I'm so happy that I listened to my gut in so many situations. Like your intuition is never lying to you. And if you ever find yourself second guessing your intuition, ask yourself why, you know, like your intuition is just always on point.
Yeah. And it never hurts to pause and like, and ask yourself why. I think that's great advice.
If you're someone who experiences chronic painful sex, it's likely, or at least very possible, that you may also experience chronic painful periods. I know I did. I recently discovered a supplement brand on Instagram, and I was intrigued because I was tired of relying on prescription strength ibuprofen every time I got my period. That brand is Semaine, and I am positively obsessed. I take their supplement, The Daily, for hormonal balance, and their PMS support pill, leading up to and at the start of my period for major cramp relief. Semaine was founded by twin sisters with endometriosis and one of their husbands, a biomedical engineer. Semaine is super transparent and runs third-party clinical trials for their supplements. The results and the reviews speak for themselves. And I speak for them too. I highly recommend you check them out. Everyone's body is different and you can make that decision obviously for yourself. But I really do love Semaine and what they stand for. If you want to check them out, head to semainehealth.com and use code TABU, that's T-A-B-U, for 20% off your purchase. Let me know what you think. I'm seriously such a fan. And while we're on the topic of periods, I want to recommend one of my favorite period underwear brands, Revel Cares. Formerly known as Revel and now known as Revel Cares / just Cares. If you struggle to use tampons or want to switch to a comfortable, reusable option during your period, Cares is the leak-proof period undies brand for you. I've been a period underwear convert for years, but not all brands actually hold as much blood as my flow be flowing. Cares undies range from light to ultra. That's what I need. And sizing from extra, extra small to 7X. They're an inclusive period underwear brand that genuinely cares. My favorite style is probably the Freya, but check them out for yourself to see what you love the best. You can use code AFM15 for 15% off your first purchase. And that's going to be at getcares.com. And now back to our episode.
I guess to touch on like with a long-term partner, I guess, would you see this more as like a sexual incompatibility, or what would be your advice for a couple where, let's say, of course, you know, penetration is not the end all be all. There's many other things you can do. There's many other ways to experience pleasure. But I think especially for men or, you know, anyone with a penis, the penetration is like kind of what they want, right? Not for all and not in all cases, but in many cases. And if that is something that they really, really want, and their partner does experience pain and is still struggling with pain, of course they want to be patient and compassionate and understanding. But at what point is it like, I don't know, an incompatibility, or maybe like, I guess, how do you deal with that? Or how would you recommend people kind of deal with that when one partner's needs maybe aren't being satisfied? And I know there's other ways to experience pleasure, but I know that I've also heard from people where it's like, you know, they will do that, but then they still feel like they're missing the penetration part.
Therapy, couples therapy. I don't know, because that's, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, they could always look, you know, if the significant other that was experiencing the pain with penetration, if they were okay with their partner maybe looking to a toy or maybe like making something sexual out of that, like as like a kink or something, you know, they could explore that route. But I would say, you know, if your partner really needs penetration that bad, I mean, you just give good head. Like, that's fine. But like, if your partner really needs penetration that bad, then I would recommend couples therapy and seeing how to work through it together and, you know, finding other ways to be intimate and seeing if that helps satisfy that partner's needs. But to be honest, I've never ever been presented with this situation in any of my clients. I've never, like, no one's ever opened up to me about having that difficulty with their partner, you know, which could be either that they're keeping it from me or that they just never came across it. I think the latter, because I literally, there's no such thing as TMI in my office and all my clients know that. But that's a really interesting topic. I don't really know. I'm curious to see what Alyssa would, what her opinions are on that.
Yeah. I think if you say, for example, it's some kind of what I was speaking about earlier, where in different phases of your cycle, you might be more down for penetration than other times. I think having a conversation with your partner about different versions of what your sex could look like and actually sitting there and having a real conversation about it. We did a practice way back when. We did like a yes, no, maybe list. So I don't know if you guys have heard about that before. So fun. I looked up, you can like look up kind of templates of them or you can just make it yourself. But I wrote down two different pages for us. I like printed it out, guys. I was like so on it. Printed these out. And you check yes, no, maybe for whether you'd want to try something or not. I printed it out and we sat there together and we did the little quiz together.
That's amazing. So, send it to us. I want to take it tonight.
Yeah, of course. It's so fun because you do your answers. You're not talking about it. It's not like, the thing is, it takes the pressure away because it's not like, hey, babe, would you ever want to try like this specific toy? And then it's like that weird conversation where you're like, well, I don't know. And you're kind of just like giving your first response. It gives you a second to actually think about it. Like, in theory, would I want to try this? Yeah.
Oh my, and then, love that.
Isn't that awesome? And so then instead of just being like anal, yes or no, it's like, well, maybe under like this scenario. And if we tried this toy first and then built up to it, and then you're able to have, then you go through one at a time and you have the conversation about what that would be like. A, it's just sexy and fun to do in the first place if you're struggling with low libido or not being able to communicate well during sex or even just like around the topic of sex. It's like, it's giving you a thing to talk about. It's almost like a script, which is so helpful. And then it opens you up to different ideas. So even something like mutual masturbation, you might not think about it, but it can be super fun, especially for new couples who are like, let me show you what I do for myself so that you can understand, you know, am I going like crazy fast, like banging it out? Or am I like super chill and relaxed? Or am I using a toy? All of these things that would be helpful for them to know about you. You're able to sit there and actually do that. And it kind of gives you like a, it's like a few week course of like starting out a sex relationship, you know?
I love that. I love that advice. That is so good. That actually kind of reminds me of the Netflix show, How to Build a Sex Room, which I was obsessed with.
So good.
Yes. So good. And I feel like she must have mentioned something like that, or I don't know, but this is the first time I remember hearing something like that. So that's such good advice. And I want you to send me that because I literally want to do that.
I will. I'll send it through so you can like pop it in the description of the podcast or whatever so people can go find it.
I was going to say, I'll have to add it. I feel like yes, no, maybe lists are so great. And I think to kind of your point as well about just opening up communication, you know, like when you even see, I mean, I guess it depends. If you make it yourself, it's probably things, of course, that you've already thought of. But if you go to ones that are online, there can be so many things that you may have never even heard of, or you're like, what is that? So then it's just opening up like this conversation with your partner where it's like, ooh, like temperature play, like what is that? Or like all these other things, you know, that a lot of people have never really heard of. And then that probably just like alleviates a lot of the discomfort. Like you said, if you do feel uncomfortable talking about sex with your partner, I think that, or if you're not like comfortable saying, oh, you know, that's going to just, any communication is going to continue to like make it easier for you to communicate when something's not feeling good, when you want to try something, like, et cetera. So yes, I agree. I love that advice. And definitely I will include a yes, no, maybe list in the description for this episode.
I think it's so good too, because your original question was like, what do you do when someone wants penetration, but they can't get penetration? And then something like that, look at, like, sometimes people don't even know that there's more than just penetration. You know what I'm saying? Like, that would be amazing, because I really feel like young guys, they just think that all there is getting head and penis and vagina. And then you give them a list like this, they're like, these are all the things that we can explore together. Like, this is insane. And then they're so much more excited. You know what I mean? Like, what an amazing opportunity to save your sex life.
Exactly. Like, we haven't even scratched the surface of what we can do.
Wow. I love that.
Even like things that can seem like non-sexual, like certain kinks, you can go online and just look up like kink tests, and it asks you a whole plethora of questions basically about like what you even find attractive. And it doesn't, they're not like, do you like rope play? It's more like a little bit detailed and like more so that you don't know what they're alluding to, if that makes sense. And then by the end of it, how fun is that? You sit there with your partner, you do the quiz, and then you go, hey babe, look what I got. And then you can see if any of them match up. And if they match up, especially, or if they're the opposite, for example, like one of you is more submissive, one of you is more dominant, it's like, boom, you can use that just like that. And it takes you like 10 minutes. So good.
No, I love that. I love also that it's not leading questions, I guess it sounds like, because I think, yeah, if you were to say something like this specific thing, if you've never heard of it, you might be like, no, I definitely wouldn't do that. But if it's something that's like, I haven't taken a kink, what's it? It's a kink test, a kink quiz?
Kink test, yeah.
Okay, a kink test. I haven't taken a kink test, but now I want to, because I think that would be very cool. It probably, it's like a personality test maybe, you know, where you're like,
ooh. Yeah, literally.
I guess while we're on the topic, real quick, can you mention maybe both of you like a few things that people can do that aren't penetration, that are like fun, intimate activities that they can do, maybe that are like lesser known?
You want to go first?
Sure. Okay, let's see. We can do, you can do mutual masturbation. There's like a million toys out there. There's like clitoral stimulation toys. There's penetrative toys. You can obviously do oral. You can do that with just one of you receiving. You can do it with both of you like receiving.
Oral with the hands.
To allude to things, you know. There's so many like specific, you know, kinks that people wouldn't think would turn them on. Say in the first place, you think, okay, normally we have sex for 10 minutes. He like will finger me for a minute. I will like do oral on him for a minute, and then we have penetration for 8 minutes, and then we're out of there. So if you're used to that kind of setup, even just breaking it up with being like, okay, we're going to start today with one of us being blindfolded, you know, or we're going to start today with one of us like having a different type of sensation, like running your hands along their body, but like just hovering it over, more of like that, you know, touch sensation, hot and cold sensation. I think of all your five senses, like smell, taste, sound, everything, ASMR. Like there are so many things that you can do to get yourself kind of into that mood, which absolutely can lead to penetration, but it doesn't always have to. And I think this is like a fundamental thing about sex, is that people start to realize that orgasm isn't the end goal. And I've been seeing this more and more recently. And I think it's so important that we have that idea that you can have a really enjoyable, fun sexual experience, even potentially just watching the other person enjoy that experience without having an orgasm. And it can be great. And that doesn't mean that you can't still have orgasms. You should. And it's good for you. It's not just fun. It is good for you. But it doesn't have to be the end goal. Sometimes with sex, instead of being like, okay, 10 minutes, let's both make sure we orgasm, that's, you know, we've checked the box. Being like, let's use this session to explore. Like, let's think of this as like a workshop. And that takes all the pressure off of having to keep this specific mood, having to keep this specific like tone with how you talk and music and all of this stuff to make it look like sex. You have to kind of break yourself off from this idea of what sex is meant to look like and realize that it can just be a fun chance for you to like explore and kind of like workshop with your partner. So
totally. Yeah, I would say I think one that both my partner and I really enjoy are massages. Like, I really enjoy a good massage, like literally naked on the bed with just like oil. And if it turns into something, great. If not, I just got like a bum ass massage for the night. You know what I mean? And I get a great sleep. So I think that's really fun. I also think, like, me personally, I like to do things that I wouldn't normally do. Like, maybe, I mean, I walk around the apartment naked literally all the time. So that's nothing special for him. I mean, every time he sees my body, it's special, obviously. But like, me walking around the apartment naked is not special. But maybe I'll have like, I have a really cute red dress, like a cute little red lingerie dress. Like, maybe that's special. One of his, I'm going to put him out there. He's probably listening. He can hear me. He loves the idea of like a dress with no underwear. You know what I mean? Like, that's like what he fantasizes about. My boyfriend's gonna be like, shut up. But he's literally in the other room. But like, I'll like put on this cute little red dress that I have that I really never wear. Like, I have, you know, for being a pelvic floor therapist, I have maybe like two pieces of lingerie, and I'll put it on and I'll walk around, and that's like very stimulating for him. You know what I mean? And maybe something comes out of it, maybe something doesn't, but like, it brings me pleasure knowing that I'm bringing him pleasure just by doing that. So I think like even those like little things like that. And I love the sensation one that you talked about. We actually were watching How to Build a Sex Room. And I think one of the first episodes, she was talking about how like trying different sensations, like being blindfolded or just closing your eyes and trying different sensations and seeing what your partner likes. Like, we actually both didn't like the chain sensation, which was super interesting, but we loved the soft feathery like sensation. And then just doing that all along the body. And it's very interesting, like when you take the whole, yeah, he's about to, you know, put his penis inside of me, and you're just like going about touch and what you feel like, even like on the bottom of your foot, because your foot and your homunculus and your brain are sit very close to your genitals, which is why when you orgasm, your feet can like curl. So doing like things like a foot massage or like touching the feet, there's a reason why people like that, because it's very close to that in your brain. So like, just seeing where different touch feels in the body is such a cool thing. So I really loved that one too. And I resonated with that.
Yeah, I love all of that too. And I think it reminds me of like the idea that for women, most women experience more like a responsive desire. So not like there needs to be some type of stimulus or some type of something to get you in the mood, to get you there, to get you aroused, versus more so for men, but not always. Everybody has different, you know, way that they get aroused, but it's maybe more of that, like, they can just see you and be like, I'm ready to go, you know, like, I'm ready, let's go. And I think taking more time to like explore your body, touch, and just do all of these more explorative things can get you in the mood more and like get you more aroused, which is ultimately going to like relax your body and make it more, you know, if it goes to penetration, which it doesn't have to, but if it does, you're also going to be just like so much more ready for it because your body has been prepared, you know, for that. Actually, and real quick, I just want to ask about that as far as like physiologically speaking, if you wanted to do something like a quickie, right? Like, you only have 10 minutes, which in itself is probably for many people arousing. So that's going to help. But, if you don't have that much time for, I don't like the term foreplay, but if you don't have much time, I guess, to like touch, to warm up, let's say that. Yeah. What advice do you have, or like, what can people do if they don't have much time and they don't have much time to warm up?
I mean, me personally, I will just whip out my vibrator and whip out a lube bottle, and then a recipe for amazing like little quickie sex. So that's like my go-to for quickie. If I know that I don't have like the time, or I don't even, like, there's times where I'm literally in the mood for quickie, and that's cool because I'm in the mood for that. And then there's times where it's more slow and, you know, more time for warming up. But when I'm in the mood for quickie, I grab those two things and I'm Gucci.
That's awesome. Okay, and then also really quickly, because Alyssa, you mentioned, I think you mentioned fingering, right? So, or also even using your own finger, which I think is really interesting and also would be really powerful probably for a lot of people, because I think a lot of us don't even, you know, touch ourselves or like really don't normalize or feel comfortable touching ourselves penetration wise, you know, with our own hands or whatever it is. So I guess as far as fingering goes, because I think fingering can be amazing and I also have experienced when it is not. So when you say that it's more about technique, or is it, yeah, like what makes it good versus when can it be super uncomfortable and why?
Yeah, I think it can be different for everybody. Obviously, everyone has different sensations and want different things. A lot of the time people will think of fingering as being like insert, take it out, insert, take it out. It's like that, what you would say do for penetration with a penis. Whereas we're not necessarily trying to replicate like a small version of a penis. If people like that, that's fine. And obviously that's good. If that works for you to feel that sensation in and out of the opening, that's great. But I have found the more that we've kind of played around with it, it's more to do with like that come hither motion, the kind of, you know, cupping a little bit of like creating that little C curve, you know what I'm saying, like that, and kind of like drawing up towards the pubic bone. And that kind of feeling, like some people will call it like G-spot stimulation, that kind of feeling right in there. I find that that tends to be the best way to enjoy it. But there's a lot to do with fingering that people don't really think about. A, cleanliness, like people's nails, all of that. You actually need to think about that kind of stuff. Like it can be uncomfortable even if someone has like a nail that is like too long. Like obviously she's not out here fingering herself right now with these nails, okay? It's just, you know, it's not happening and we know that and that's fine. But if you have like longer nails or something like that, you can literally hurt yourself. So you do have to be careful. And if for whatever reason, the sensation of like a finger makes you uncomfortable, you can always get a toy that has that similar curve. And then that's meant to be very nice as well for that. So
amazing. And then, okay, I will wrap up with a final question, which is, Sabrina, for anyone who obviously – I know that so many people are going to be excited about your class, but, and maybe people are hopefully are more open now to either working with a therapist, I would say probably a sex therapist, someone who actually specializes in sex and talking about sex and understanding and how to approach this topic. And then also with a pelvic floor PT, I guess, what can people expect from working with a pelvic floor PT? Like, what does that look like? What are the goals? How long? I know, of course, it's going to be different for everybody, but how long does that take? And, you know, what are realistic expectations from working with someone?
Yeah, that's a really good question and kind of a loaded question because it is so individualized. But I will say, like, we'll really go over whole body. So I really like to take a whole body approach, like, you know, looking at different, you know, where you're at in your life, like who you surround yourself with, your work environment, all those things. Like, how can we start to reduce your stress, you know, on a daily basis? So that's like one thing I really look at. I look at your exercise levels. I look at the way you eat, the way you hydrate, like the ways that you're taking care of yourself. I look at, because all of that, whether we want to believe it or not, our lifestyle has a huge impact on the way our body carries tension and stress. So that's like where I really we'll first hone in on. And then I'll give you little like tasks, like maybe practicing diaphragmatic breathing, because a lot of people are chest breathers. So we don't even really expand our diaphragm the ways that we should, giving our pelvic floor room to really move up and down the way it should, because our diaphragm moves with our pelvic floor and vice versa. And then we'll do more external release, like maybe I always check abdomen to see where people are carrying tension, hip flexors, areas like that. And then we'll do more internal when my patient's ready. And that's when it could look like this. It could look like either internal work digitally, so with the therapist's finger, or it could be like dilators, or it could be a pelvic wand. It really depends on how they present on the exam. But I will say, usually with like initial penetration, like the straight in kind of pain, dilators, because it's literally mimicking that. Where I have people that have maybe more complex diagnoses, like IC, endometriosis, things like that, even people that are like chronic cyclists or things like that, or poor posture, I guess that could really apply to anyone. That's when I'll see like more deeper pain, and I'll use the pelvic wand to kind of hook around the hips. And that's where people can carry a lot of tension too. People with a history of trauma have a lot of deep penetration pain because women carry so much emotional stress and trauma in their hips. It's insane. Like, I've had people that have gone to the chiropractor and have gotten their hips adjusted, and they have this like huge emotional release. I had a patient yesterday who came back to me. I haven't seen her in a week. And she's like, "You worked on me internally." And I literally cried the whole way home because I had this like huge emotional release. So it's really crazy, you know, where the body can hold on to this kind of tension and what we work through. And of course, like, depending on the severity of the overactive pelvic floor, the severity of the pain with penetration, or I shouldn't say that, the severity of the pelvic floor presentation, it can take, you know, I've literally had it take, I had one patient who saw me for 3 sessions privately, and she's like, she had vaginismus. Like, she had vaginismus, and she was like, "I'm good. I'm pain-free sex with my husband." She wasn't having sex for 10 years of her marriage. 3 sessions with me, she was having pain-free sex with her husband. And the reason why she came to see me, because she wanted to have a baby. So like, that was insane. And then it's like amazing. And then I had someone who had, she was a server, and she was on her feet a lot, but she didn't, you know, there was a lot of things in her lifestyle that just weren't helping her. And she had really, really, really bad back pain. And your back and your hips just super influence your pelvic floor. So if you have chronic back pain, chronic hip pain that, you know, you're not really addressing, or, you know, it's just lingering, that can really influence your pelvic floor. And we didn't start seeing changes until after a year. So it's like, that's not the case for everyone. I would say the most, and this is what I put in my course, the course is like, you have 3 to 6 months worth of therapy in this course. Cause that's what I would say the average is for the majority. Of course, there's outliers that take longer. There's things that happen in life that can, you know, set you back, that I'm not going to say that obviously healing is not linear. So I'm not going to say that everyone has this like upward slope of healing. There's times where things set you back, but I would say on average, 3 to 6 months is like my happy spot with therapy.
Awesome. Thank you for going through that, because also all of the questions I didn't get to, I feel like you just tick, 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 tick through all of them. I was like, yes, 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 hitting all the marks.
Beautiful. Yeah,
good. So no, that's amazing. And thank you so much. I definitely do want more people to know that that's an option. And because I just think that too many people have resigned themselves to having this pain and to having this discomfort, and it does not have to be that way. So thank you so much for sharing that. For each of you, just to close things out, can you just tell people where to find you and how they can continue to engage with you?
Sure. So my Instagram and my TikTok is Alyssa Taylor Harper. I'm mostly on TikTok, but there you go. And then I also have a podcast called She Said What, and it is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts.
So I am on Instagram and TikTok. My TikTok is No Such Thing as TMI. That was my Instagram, but then it got taken down. So for sexual content, not so fun fact. And then I have a new Instagram now. It's dr.sabrinabaxter. My podcast is No Such Thing as TMI, also on Spotify and Apple. And my website is drsabrinabaxter.com.
Awesome. Thank you. And it's so funny, actually, because No Such Thing, our tagline used to be like, there's no such thing as TMI. So I absolutely love that that's your whole platform, because I couldn't agree more. I think it's perfect. And I think it's great to like not have people think things are TMI.
Yeah, actually, when I first became a pelvic floor therapist, I made that my Instagram handle. And I was surprised that like no other person had it. And then when I started like, you know, making friends online, like other pelvic floor therapists around the country, around the world, they'd be like, "Oh my God, that's the perfect name for pelvic floor therapy." And I'm like, "I know." And honestly, I don't even care that my account with 80,000 followers got taken down. I care that I don't have that freaking username anymore. Like, I just want my username.
That's the hardest thing with, yeah, talking about this stuff on social media, because any day, that's tough. I mean, yes, one username. Also, that is a lot of followers, and I'm sure hopefully a lot of them have been able to find you since then. But yeah, it's so weird too, because I feel like Instagram's always been problematic, but TikTok I actually think is worse, which I was surprised by, because I felt like it's more for a younger generation, which I would think would be more I mean, I know that the probably the user base is way more open-minded, but I guess the creators or the whatever are just more restrictive of the content. So anyway.
Oh, I was just going to say, I had my first video yesterday that I posted that was like, it came up and was like, this is against community guidelines. And I was like, because I've never had that before. And I was so nervous.
God, I've literally had hundreds. I think that's why I think all platforms literally hate me. I've had hundreds go against community guidelines. On Instagram, actually, I had absolutely zero warning. Like, I just woke up one day and my account was gone. Yeah, it was really, it was a very.
Oh my God. That's like my biggest fear. Oh God.
My best advice would be to link it to a Facebook, because Meta, if the platforms like coincide, then they'll help you get it back. But I will say, anyone that's listening, if you have a favorite like sexual wellness, you know, person that you follow, subscribe to their newsletter, because that's how you'll always stay in touch with them. Just like, God forbid, you know, when their account gets silenced or they get silenced, like, the newsletter is the only way that, you know, you can stay in touch with them. And that's been a saving grace for me, is just creating a newsletter and having people, like, you know, my loyal people follow my newsletter.
No, that's really good advice. Cause yeah, every day there's so many people that have been kicked off or lose their account or have to start over. So that's unfortunate, but it means, you know, we're doing something right. Anyway. All right. Well, thank you both so much, and enjoy the rest of your respective days/evenings.
Hey, Mia here. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode. It was definitely one that I was really eager to publish based on my own experiences with painful sex. I just know far too many people, including myself for years, and even still sometimes, who have just normalized some pain or discomfort with sex. And it does not have to be that way. There are so many different ways to experience pleasure. There are so many resources for support and guidance and help. So just know that you're not alone. You can have the most amazing sex, and you deserve that. You absolutely, absolutely 1000% deserve that. So anyway, I know this was a long episode. There was so much to pack in. I'd love your feedback on that as well. Like, do you enjoy having two different guests in the same episode? Do you want to have shorter episodes? What topics do you want to talk about? It's really helpful to me to know what you want to listen to, because while I'm asking for myself, I'm ultimately asking for you. So please let me know. Follow us on Instagram at askingformyself with the number 4. And like Sabrina said, subscribe to our newsletter, the Talk Taboo newsletter. I don't actually keep up with it that much, but it is a goal of mine to start consistently emailing and just keeping you updated, providing more resources. And along with that, actually, I just published a new website for Asking for Myself. It's askingformyself.com. Amazing. And check that out if you want to stay tuned, keep up with the episodes. And I'm going to post more resources there and have that be really a hub for the podcast. So I'm really, really excited about that. A lot of things are in the works. Hold me accountable. I need it. I really want to create something that's a meaningful resource for everyone listening and everyone who's not listening, for you to share with people in your life or people who could use the help. So anyway, this is the long outro, but thank you again. I'm just really excited to have people get the support that they need. So continue asking for yourself and let me know, DM me, email me, whatever. Let's get in touch and let's start normalizing pleasure. Okay. Have a great week. Bye.